Pickaxe.
Hello, I'm Wheels, the Dungeon Master for Storybreakers. Love Critical Role in movies like Hot Fuzz and Spotlight? Actual play series Storybreakers combines the fantasy adventure of Dungeons & Dragons with small-town comedy and mystery in an episodic tale of journalists on the hunt for the secret underbelly of a tiny town where nothing seems to happen.
But excuse me if I don't think a bunch of ragtag journalists from a podunk town are actually going to be of any help.
But technically, I don't come from here.
When the mysterious arrival of a celebrity from the Heroes and Adventurers Guild sets off a strange conspiracy, the group will have to leave what they think they know about the world at the door if they're ever to unravel the truth at the heart of this seemingly nondescript town.
It's not front page of the Sasai Star. No.
I pull up the today's like installment of the news to see what the front page actually is.
There's a big picture of a pumpkin that's been stepped on, and it says, "Outrage as pumpkin stepped on."
Storybreaker Season 1 in its entirety is available for listening right now wherever you get your podcasts, with Season 2 on the way. Find out more at dicebreaker.com.
All right, you get to go?
I don't have a thing. I need to think of a thing.
Do you need a moment, Chris?
Garbage boy.
I was just going to say piece of shit.
Fucking loser.
Just go with that. Just human trash. Just go with that.
I feel like you've had that one.
You had garbage bag last week, or trash bag.
Yeah, I'll try and put a spin on it.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Pitch Please, the podcast where people who play games pitch ideas to people who make them. We've got an extra special pitch this week for you, but I'll get into that in a minute. Tom, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing really well, Alex. I'm doing great. How are you? I never ask.
There was a helicopter outside my house for like an hour about 1 o'clock in the morning last night. There was a huge accident and it's driven me. So that's why I'm drinking coffee right now. That's my story. I'm done.
Wow. Wow. What a story. Is that the pitch?
Helicopter, the game.
Wouldn't play.
Hi, I'm Brunch Club developer and inspiration for the Pokemon Trubbish, Chris Yules.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
Hopefully Alex keeps in the bit before the intro where we were talking about how you're going to put a spin on it.
You're going to have to now.
James, you're also here.
Hello, I'm James, one of the two devs who made Drink More Glurp.
Made, yeah.
Birth.
You sound less enthusiastic about that with every week that passes.
We'll see. Maybe next week it'll be like,
welcome.
Hey guys, it's great.
Yeah. How does it?
Welcome
how does
to
it
the club.
Like, we do have actual developers, maybe not many, but they listen to this podcast, and probably lots of people who haven't released something or who are just making something, playing around. What does it feel like, James, to having recently released a game? Where's your head?
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting this like euphoric, like it's done, but really didn't happen. It was really strange. Also, the lockdown didn't help. You know, I wanted to do a big bash and like, you know, get everybody together, have a few drinks and celebrate, but we couldn't really do that. So it was kind of like, I just watched Bree stream the game for like 8 hours or something stupid. So I was like, cool.
I guess you're in lockdown. Thing. You can bash if you want. There's no one around to watch.
That's my next game.
But I guess do you think it's part of that like it's probably misattributed, but like the George Lucas thing of like a film is never finished, it's just
that's right,
like
yeah.
You just give up on it and then release it, like you just
well I wouldn't say we gave up on
I'm
it
paraphrasing. He didn't say that exactly.
Well, they did patch cats.
Really? Oh, of course, the butthole thing. Yeah,
no, it was The butthole version is different. This was just improving the CG. Butthole version was still pre-release.
Release the butthole cut.
All right, before we get too carried away by cats' buttholes, the reason this is an extra special pitch this week is because for the first time, we are going to properly look at a viewer submission, a viewer pitch. And we've done this before. We've gone
hole.
Through kind of like quick... you know, quick one-liners or whatever. But this is the first, I got to be honest, like this is the first time we've actually had someone submit a proper big pitch to us.
It's a big pitch. It's 4 pages,
it's Alex. A big one. So,
and listen,
called...
I printed it out. Look, can you hear that?
Listen
Look,
to I, that.
That's, I'm going through all 4 pages.
Okay. So a couple of, the other week, a guy called Shane tweeted us, which is Pitch Please Pod. How do you spell that, Tom?
You spell it pitch plus pod. Pitch please without the vowels, pod with the vowel.
That's right. For some and that's reason. Exactly what you guys can do if you also have some ideas. He said, first of all, I wanted to thank you all. and everyone else who's ever been on the show for producing quality content week in and week out. So he's buttering us up immediately, right?
Yeah.
I'm not falling for that trick. Okay. I know how
I feel like already he's kind of in our bad books, okay? So it's not a good start.
Yeah, so straight away, not a good start. Yeah. You can't
already appease us.
Okay.
Insult us before you pitch.
He then continues to say, I drive for a living. In the past month, I've been just into a better pitch, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So I grew up with a love for games. My first passion was to be a game designer. He doesn't have like, he's like rubbish at art and programming. So his best chance is to be the ideas guy, right?
Oh, that's me.
He says, I understand if there's a bit too much here, but I'm very in depth when it comes to my ideas. I provided a cheat sheet with bullet points to find the most important notes and mechanics. And I tried to factor in an answer for every question I could think of. Okay?
This is so professional compared to what we normally do. Yeah, normally Alex comes in and just says, have you seen Lost? Make a game.
Tiny houses.
Tom, can you break this down? Like, we're going to go through it bit by bit, but like the initial just basic pitch idea, can you reveal that to us, please, Tom?
Yeah, sure. So this has a name already, which will change.
It will definitely change. Coming to my house?
The name is War Room, right? Which is definitely going to change. So War Room by Shane, a.k.a. the King of Mushan.
Yeah. He does have a Twitter account, but it's a load of numbers and stuff. I'll link it, but I'm not going to say it out.
I mean, I Googled where Mushan was, and I don't want to diminish his royalty at all, but it's like you can walk across it in like 30 minutes. It's in Albania. So thanks, King of Mushan, for your pitch. Anyway, so the initial pitch. Imagine Total War, specifically the combat elements of Total War, commanding large forces by unit type and using military strategy to outwit your opponents. Now, this game is essentially that, but instead of being an omnipresent floating camera that can command troops on the fly, you're playing the game from the perspective of a general, planning tactics and strategy from the safety of his war room. The game is turn-based, and you have a bird's eye view of the battlefield with each group of soldiers represented by a figurine or token. Basically, you give each group of soldiers their orders, and as if you're communicating with a faraway battle, you wait until next turn to see how your enemy moves. But look out, because your troops may not always do what you tell them.
Mm-hmm. So,
Time Commanders. It's Time Commanders, the video game.
No, Time Commanders, they did that in Total War, didn't they?
Yeah, but they still had everyone around the battle table, and then they fed the things back to the people in... Basically, there was a group of people who didn't know how to play video games, and they told the people who understand how to play Total War where to move people.
It was a
TV show.
The Yogscast did a Warhammer version against Hat Films.
Yeah. This was a show, right? It was just
it's a British TV show, yeah?
Richard Hammond presented it originally.
Yeah.
Not originally. And Greg Wallace did a reboot.
All right.
He did, yeah.
You know, Greg Wallace from MasterChef.
Okay, so hang on. Like, in one, can you quickly explain how does Time Commanders work? What is that TV show? It's people standing around a table.
Okay, so
it's like this, basically.
Yeah, so it used to, Time Commanders, is the only way I can describe it, is a bunch of history nerds were like, I read about the Battle of Troy. I can do that. I can make sure he doesn't lose because I know the mistakes he made. That's my historian voice.
Yeah, nice. Very good.
It's very good. Very accurate. Mm. So they come in and they have a really stupid team name. It's normally like, you know, the Doodaseers or something like that because they're all men.
Doodaseers.
They're trying to be like Bodiseer.
Was that real one or did you just make that up?
I think it is real. And then they stand around a table and they push the little blocks around. Joe with the long sticks that have the little flat bit on. They push them around
that's
like that.
My
and
dream.
They relay it back to like some people playing on Total War on computers. And then they're like, oh, we're being flanked from the east by the cavalry. And they're like, oh, no, send a flanking unit south. And they're like, send a flanking unit south.
So
yeah, there's basically two people playing on an actual like battle map, giving commands to people playing it in the game. And
that's exactly what this is. But like Time Commanders was taking from the idea of a war room, right? Which is what this is doing as well.
So what do you think of that initial pitch beyond Time Commanders? It's basically Time Commanders the game.
I like Total War anyway. And there's a really good VR game called something. I will find out now. But it was the same principle where you put your troops where you want to put them. But it's one of the, like, the one thing I have about Total War is I've always wanted it to be like, if I click on a unit, I want it to then turn into like chivalry, where I become the unit and I can have like fights within that war. I always think that would be really good, right?
Oh, okay, yeah.
And the VR version of that is that you can click on a unit and you become them and you start shooting, so you can become a sniper. And
all right, so
you can,
well, there are elements like that in other units. Kind of like, what's that Warhammer game where you, maybe it's a bunch of Warhammer games, but where you can like automate the battles, or you can just go in and manually fight them.
Yeah,
like,
Total
is that
War
basically
Warhammer.
all the yeah, and so like there are games like that, but I think the way Shane is pitching this is that it is very much not that.
It's turn based. It's not
because you are completely distanced from what is happening, right? You can't see the war going on, you're just getting information in the result, like in the way of things moving about on the board.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And there's a strategy to that, which is good. But then I think at the same, so Into the Breach is a different way of going about turn-based sort of strategy games, because every move, you know what the enemy's going to do.
Yeah.
So you can plan for stuff and like plan ahead.
This is the opposite. You don't even know if your troops are going to do that.
Will that become frustrating? Like because it's turn-based, reaction isn't really a thing you can do quickly.
Well,
like, do you set orders and say for the next three turns, these guys are going to be locked into this order because I can't relay information quick enough? Or,
well, like, Chris, so you may have what error is this set as well? It depends on the kind of good.
Okay, so yeah, if this was just that pitch, if that was just the pitch, then we'd have a lot to discuss. However, there's not much more.
I mean, that pitch wasn't four pages long. Hang on, I've got three more pages
really
to get
big
through.
Font. Really big letter. Oh,
yeah. Episode 72.
Sorry, James.
I'm like a delay, second behind you.
So let's try and answer your questions real quick. So, turn-based tactical combat. I'm onto the mechanics section now. Experience a large-scale battle in the safest and most tactical way possible by removing yourself from the battle. Each time you select a group of units, you decide what formation you want to arrange themselves in, where you want them to go, and what you want them to do, be it charging the enemy or suppressing their position and forcing them into more open terrain. So that's kind of like the commands you can give them, you know, hunker down or aggressively approach the enemy or whatever. Maybe even hunker down just means you just leave them there for a little while you can focus on other intricate details that's happening in the battle, like this person flanking around to the right suddenly gets attacked by someone on the left and you're like, oh shit, I need to focus this down.
Well,
and
I was
giving
kind of
commands like that.
I was kind of imagining like say if you are using like the, you know, like the long sticks with the little things on the end or whatever, you're pushing, or like things are being pushed into like a space or, you know, a hex or whatever they're going to be. And then you get a little pop-up UI that is like, once you put your army into an area, you can then decide on the formation that they're going to execute. Like whether it's going to be, I don't know, like whatever's relevant to that particular moment, like whether it's like, I don't know what the army formations are. Turtle, that would be all of mine.
Yeah, turtle formation.
Yeah.
V.
Yeah.
V. Bull horns.
Horns, yeah.
Crab claws.
So I imagine, like, UI-wise, when you're giving the commands, it's literally like you've got this block of units on the board. If you drag them forward, an arrow comes out and that stays in position. You can kind of see, like, the arrow movements of all of these things. Like, before you press end turn, you've got, you know, this guy's got, like, a little target. So he's, like, going to target this particular group of enemies. Or this one's got an arrow flanking around to the left-hand side. So, you know, he's going to potentially do that. Also, there's environmental combat. Each time you enter combat, you may not always know what the battlefield will look like until you're in the heat of it. So I guess to begin with, you've got a battle map that is almost blank. Or maybe you know very basic information about it. There's, yeah, I suppose, like, there's a river going through that. You know that much from just knowing the area, but
yeah, like,
you know,
you the basic
know
topology. But I don't know if they mentioned this, and I probably already jumped the gun. Do you choose where you start your units? Like, can you, like, okay, I have, like in Total War, how you can lay out your whole army within a certain range, but in this, actually, it'd be like, okay, I want to put this guy here, you know, this group
I don't think that's covered, like, in terms of the beginning, how the
I'm out.
I guess you can play some at the beginning of the combat.
There becomes an extra strategy of, it's like, say you lost a fight, you'd be like, well, if only I started, you know, if I started my archers, whatever unit, like archers on the left flank, and they're a higher ground. Okay, that gives me an advantage there. Okay, there's some trees for cover. I could put, maybe hide the cavalry in there to start with because they can't be found. But and I think that adds another...
Sorry, Ron.
So, because it adds another layer of strategy, and also stops that the common thing of when people get frustrated at a game because the game feels unfair. Where if you again give more people more choice, it feels more like your fault and you did something wrong, and you can fix it if you did something else. But like the more freedom you give people, like you don't want a game to. I think I've said this so many fucking times. Is you don't want a game to feel frustrating to play because you keep losing. Because you feel like the game has an advantage.
Yeah, if you've done something. Yeah, if you don't understand how you can get better.
You want to make it your own fault, not the game's fault.
Yeah. Well, to finish off the environmental combat thing, it does say here, in a forest, units take much less damage from archers and cavalry. So I guess that kind of answers the era. Although later down here, it does also talk about other eras. So, you know, crossing a river, cavalry will be severely slowed, but infantry will be able to cross easily, things like that. So that's how the environment works. I don't see how a cavalry is slower than infantry going across a river, but whatever. Now,
horses get scared, they get flighty.
Yeah, well, but if it's a deep river and you're not on a horse or not on a vehicle, right?
Well, that's where you get the cavalry. You know, when you see people, they take off their trousers or their clothes or whatever and hold them above their head and walk across.
Is that a thing that happens? Yeah, that's totally a thing that happens.
I can understand
them holding their guns above their head so the ammo doesn't get waterlogged, but all their clothes as well.
I've not seen infantry do it, but like when I've seen people in films with people traveling long distances,
hold their horses above their heads.
Take their trousers off.
That's why they're slower, because they've got to carry more.
Yeah,
but one soldier per leg.
Yeah, like say like maybe it's not cavalry. Maybe it's like, I don't know, the fucking. Like if you've got a cannon with you and you have to, I don't know, it slows you down because you have to build a bridge, some kind of makeshift bridge to get across.
They can vault. They dig in, they vault over.
Yeah. They pike across. Right. But so to answer your worries about the game being unfair, so two things here. Commanders with unique personalities, strengths and weaknesses. So, you know, you've got commanders like you do in Total War. They have their bonuses. You know, they can have things like they're cowardly, which increases their chance of disobeying orders if they're engaging a force larger than their own. Or there's the underdog trait, which means if they're encountering a troop that is bigger than their group, then they're more likely to actually succeed because they're the underdog. So things like that, which is pretty cool.
Do you spec into this, or is it traits that you, so if you form a new group of, okay, yeah.
Well, the King of Mushan, he knows, he's in your head right now.
He knows how much of a bastard I am and tries to get ahead of all my questions.
Yeah, as commanders make it through battles alive, they may earn a new strength if they performed well and came out victorious, or a new weakness if they were forced to retreat or barely survived an encounter. So they can get like scars
or something.
Yeah, he's got an arm off. So that's how they gain. I mean, I guess that does lead into potential snowballing. If you lose a battle, you've gained a weakness, you're then more likely to lose the next battle.
I was going to say that I think I don't think the commanders should have, the commanders should have abilities, but I think the individual groups of units should be the things that you can put traits on. Right.
Well, but isn't that essentially what you're... Is he saying that you, like, from what I understand at least, you're not controlling the groups of units, you're controlling a commander which represents...
Each group of units has a commander, and the commander has...
Gotcha.
Does the commander have...
That pretty much works
like an inspiration trait where it gives everybody additional power.
You would choose which unit you want to put that attached to, right? So if you have a small unit of guys, the underdog one would be better because they're always probably going to end up fighting
a large guerrilla warfare guy, right?
But you couldn't necessarily choose the underdog one, surely. Like that would be if you. But like, what I liked James's like example of say for example, if some of these were to naturally occur, like maybe there is a tree and you can spec into certain ones, but some of them are naturally occurring. For example, if you do lose a battle, maybe your commander gets an arm off, so. He, like, but then that also gives him the fearless attribute or something, which bolsters it makes him scarier to people, more intimidating. Like it bolsters the strength of his, like the faith of his crew or whatever. But it also means there's more chance of him dying in the next battle because he can't defend himself. Yeah, as
he's
well.
Got less HP or whatever. He can't attack as well. I mean, I guess
it becomes a bit more like Hail Mary, where he's HP. Like, "I've got nothing to lose. Let's just go for it." So
he just goes nuts. Yeah, yeah. Okay,
he's like, just
loses. He loses an arm. His arm. Well, that's my max HP gone down.
But also, it could be things like maybe if he does win a battle against a larger group of enemies, that gives him the underdog trait. Like maybe there's certain ways to actually get particular skills.
So they're a series of mini challenges, really. It's like achievement hunting. It's like complete this battle without your commander taking any damage plus 10 HP or complete this challenge without losing X amount of soldiers.
I mean, the longer you play, you'll know the prerequisites to gaining all of these strengths and weaknesses, right? So I guess you could then say, well, I know that the underdog one is super powerful, so I'll get everyone to do that. But I mean, getting that underdog trait to begin with would be tough because you're beating a larger force without the underdog trait. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe that's one way of doing it. Is there just naturally occurring through your play, which could be kind of cool, rather than, you know, commander level 2, pick one of 3 strengths. Okay, now
I really like the idea of them naturally occurring and like you not like it, you kind of not really having any idea. Like in the same way, so the way I imagine at the moment the gameplay loop and the way that the game would play is that you just have like it's very limited perspective. You know, you've just got the war room and perhaps you're the one who has control over the initial, you know, you can move your unit somewhere with the stick, with the little pushy stick or whatever. You move them and then you say, okay, that's my move. And then there's a pause and your general or your right-hand man or whatever, the other person at the table, then takes their stick and removes or shifts around basically everything that's happened as a result of your action. And then it's just that constant ping-ponging of, okay, what do I do now? And I think like that feeling of like, okay, I've done something. Oh, fuck, it's resulted in this. I didn't expect that to happen. My guy's lost an arm, but now I'm the underdog. How do I deal with that? That kind of thing, maybe?
I mean, the really interesting prospect with that is that the soldiers don't do what you command them to do. And then you see the result of that. So you go, I want you to march through this thick forest. And a bunch of soldiers are like, oh no. Or maybe it's a really snowy environment. And it's like, I need you to march through here. And a bunch of them just go, no, fuck that. And then you just see the result of your decisions not being carried out. And that's kind of an interesting prospect.
The problem with finger guns is if you had like a real
idea. I know, I want to hear Chris say what the problem is first, because we're just about to jump onto disobedience.
Right. Okay, so the problem with disobedience, and I think Alex mentioned this earlier, well, he said the term at least, is it would snowball. So you'd reach a part where you've lost, if you lose battles and people become more disobedient, you'd lose more and you'd lose more, and there would be, get to a point where you've point.
Isn't it just risk management though? Isn't it just like, you know that if you ask them to go through this thicket of brambles that you're going to lose a certain, you know, maybe it will give you a weighting. It will tell you, it's like, there's a 95% chance that you'll lose X amount of soldiers doing this. Maybe it's not really disobedience. Maybe it's just a weighting of what you expect to happen.
A risk factor.
So there is, so far, this game is very Total War. I think we're about to get onto the things that separate it a bit more. However, Total War, at least Warhammer does, I'm not sure about the other ones. They have each troop that you send in has I can't remember what the stat is actually called, but as it diminishes and gets down to 0, they then just flee the battle.
Yeah. But normally when your captain dies or your general dies, that like a lot of them...
Or if your army has just been like completely wiped out, all of the remaining people, they just leave. So Total War is a game that has that sort of snowball-y effect where if you wipe out troop after troop after troop and then all of the rest of them that could potentially defend just start running, then the battle's lost. So that snowball does sort of happen in Total War games, but it also makes sense thematically. Anyway, so disobedience... while commanding units, you must maintain their loyalty. By winning battles by a large margin or preserving lives, you can build loyalty with your troops. Loyalty is a scale from minus 100 to 100 starting at 0. If it reaches 100, you gain a significant boost to all damage, kind of snowbally. If it reaches minus 100, your troops abandon you. If all units abandon your army, you lose. So I feel like loyalty is this overarching thing across the entire campaign, not just specific small battles. I guess there's also a minute version of loyalty in the battles that determine whether or not they flee or whether or not they just don't listen to you. So in that case, anytime you give a unit an order, there's a chance, depending on that loyalty and the relative danger of the order, that the unit will disobey your orders and choose to make their own action. This chance is also affected by the strengths and weaknesses of the commander in charge of each unit. So that's the thing. I don't think it's a case of they don't do your order and instead they flee. It's they don't necessarily do your order, but also do something of their own. So you get a report the next time, like I told them to flank left and they're like, I didn't do that. There's cavalry coming from this way. We instead hunkered down, or we instead targeted the enemies, or target the cavalry.
This was the better idea. We've decided that this is the better course of action because we don't
like
trust
some kind of small mutiny.
Yeah, I really wish we'd thought of this mechanic during Pyrian's appearance, because he really wanted the idea of the gangsters. Yeah, like the chaos, like you just maybe making one move and then it's all going like fucking nuts. I think that would have worked really well on that. But sorry, Chris.
So one thing I am struggling to picture in my head is how you present this to people, right? Because you can't see this. You can just see this on a table.
It's just a board. Yeah.
A board. How do you present, I didn't want to do that thing because there's cavalry coming from over there. Like, because it's just going to be walls of text. Like, I can't think of a good way of presenting that as an action. Like, if you could see that, if you were playing Total War and you were seeing all the troops and it was the same principle, you could say, oh, these guys have moved that way because of that. And you don't need an explanation for that. But if you tell someone to do something, they don't do it, you get that they didn't do it, but you can't understand why, you know, the reasoning. You don't really get that because it's
so I've got a way of doing that. It's not in this pitch, so that we're now off sheet
pitch.
Okay, so
pitch.
I think the way it could work is when you've got that end of screen, like just before you press the end turn button, you've got all these commands that you can see, the arrows, the targeting symbols, the hunker down icons, all of these different things. It's all communicated in these icons. When you press end turn, it basically zooms in on one unit. They do their thing. Maybe you just see them slowly coast up the side of the map when they do their movement. You're like, great, they did that. Then you see the other guy, they fire a couple of times at the target. Perfect, they've done their action. But then when this guy starts moving up, like maybe the arrow literally just breaks, like the icon breaks in half and it's like, there's a big sound effect, like a
nice. Yeah.
And then they stop, turn, and then start shooting at someone else. And you're like, okay, I can immediately see they've broken the order that I've given them. The targeting icon, that snaps in half and they then do something else, like they start backing up. So you just basically look at every order individually and see how they enact it in really quick, snappy way.
Chris?
Go.
Hello. Are you locked to a grid? Are we free roam? Like, do they have move? Like in D&D, you can move this
I feel like it has
many
to
feet.
Be,
like,
it has to be
does
a
cavalry unit
extent.
Have a better... like distance, but then also if they're attacking, like a cavalry is good against, what are cavalry good against?
regular infantry.
Regular dudes.
But as a cavalry unit, do I have to move through them and I attack them on the way through, if that makes sense? Or do I just, click him, click there, click onto the unit, click attack? Like, how does that work? Because they obviously become a lot less... what's the word I'm searching for? Better. A lot less better when they stop moving, right? When they're a stationary target. So cavalry is all about, moving.
A cavalry, when they charge a group of infantry, say four rows of infantry, they're not going to go through the entire thing regardless. It happens in Total War games. Like they charge the front line, destroy that front line, maybe half the unit count. But then unless they turn around and try again, they're locked in position anyway. So, I mean... I guess if it's a small group of infantry or whatever and you just charge right through them, great. I guess you could give them movement.
Is
anything
movement
they go
free
through.
Form? Or is movement
I think
grid
it should
based?
Be. I think once it's grid-based or hex-based or whatever, I think... I don't know. I think you allow a lot more formation when it's not locked to a grid. Okay. I think I'd
so prefer almost, free. Are you thinking more like an area of effect? So you see, you know, the air, like a radar almost around your
radius,
your
field.
Cavalry or around your units, and you go, okay, well, as soon as I'm detected or the area of effect overlaps the other infantry, that's when they engage. So, but you're almost kind of playing a bit like golf in a way. You're trying to hit an area, trying to like shoot. Go this way, cavalry, and hope that you overlap with
the
infantry.
Yeah, I think what you know is if you click the archers, for example, you're like, right, they're archers. They should have an effective range of this. Mm-hmm. So if I place them here, they should be able to hit them. And then you move them into position, and then the archers feed back, and they're like, there's a forest in the way. We can't hit them. And you're like, oh, fuck, okay, I didn't see the forest there.
But how do you feed that back? Surely you know there's a forest because you've seen the topology.
But... I mean,
a forest don't appear. Like that's what I'm saying is the current thing I'm struggling with is that the feedback loop of your decisions and because like yeah, I can send a cavalry over there, I can send a cavalry over there, but then I don't know what the enemy is going to do. When our end of turn happens, I can send my cavalry one way, and the enemy can go in the other fucking direction, and then obviously I have to catch up with them, which is fine. But how do you feed information back to the commander? Because it's going to be a lot of text is what I'm imagining at the moment. It's like you are just getting relayed messages.
Like, why can't you just, in terms of like you've moved cavalry in one direction and then you see the result of the enemy's actions in the next move on the board. What else are you expecting to see?
Well, I'm saying when Tom says, oh, we can't shoot, there's a forest in the way. Well, surely you knew that because
something that so in terms of, because it's not like scale one to what, like it's not as though if you have the cavalry or your units in the, I don't know, the tile, let's say that there are tiles for the moment, just for the sake of easiness, and like in the adjacent tile, that doesn't mean you're like next door, you're like 20 meters away from it. You still have to go onto the tile to reveal what it is, unless you have a scout in advance who can go and tell you what the topology is. So you could move into that area and discover, okay, there's a forest on this tile. The predominant area of this tile is a forest, which makes it
so we
hard
do have
for my cavalry to maneuver.
I think it does to an extent. I think you know the very, very basic. Like if you look at it from afar, you know there's hills and shit and a mountain and a volcano.
But you can't see forests.
I mean, you don't, like, if it's free-form placement, which I think it should be, like, you know there's a forest, but you don't know the exact spread of it, or you don't know how deep it goes or whatever. Like, you know there's a forest at certain points, and then you know when you look over the hill and see, oh, actually, the forest spreads out much further than we originally thought, or something like that. Okay. Maybe there's a lake there we didn't
see.
The way
that I see this working is, you know, we've got two views currently. We've got the war room, and you've got a map, and that map could be inaccurate. It could just be, this is what we think. And then that map could get updated as troops move through.
Yeah, or maybe you don't even have a map.
Fog of war, as it were. So as you zoom in, you go, shit, there is a forest there. I thought it was further back, or, you know, it's much denser than the report said. This map is from 1800s and it's now 19, I don't know, whatever.
Or maybe there's certain battles like further out from your civilization that you just don't have a map for. Like you don't know anything about the topology of it. You just have a square.
As your campaign covers the world more, you just go to areas that you aren't familiar with. Like if your kingdom doesn't already like own that area.
I will say I am struggling with it being old timey, for lack of a better description. Like getting that feedback is like, okay, it's just like messenger owl and lots of people running backwards and forwards, which I guess is fine. You just got to get in the mindset that all these moves take a long time. But in the reality of it, you almost say, go and do this and hit play and hope that it all works out because you're not getting that one-to-one feedback.
In terms of if it's an older style game, if we're going for a hardcore realistic approach, then I think... what I'm imagining is you are on a war camp at the very edge of the battle, right?
Right.
And
yeah, that's what I imagined.
And you're basically, the information you're receiving is from fucking squires, or maybe there's a watchtower out there that's overlooking the entire battle or whatever. Yeah. And you're just receiving the feedback from that. If it's a newer style game, then everything can be done through radio. And you're just like, newer style. If it was a modern warfare thing, than radio or radar or whatever. Chris.
But you've said what I've been struggling with this whole time is the feedback. In a real life situation, you're getting fed this information from people who go, okay, hey, Commander, we've been flanked from the left by a unit of cavalry. How do you present that to the player?
I think
is it text and then the block moves to its position? Does it automatically move? Or are you
the flanking enemy comes in, like you make your decision, you move your units forward, and then the idea is that weeks of like or days or whatever have passed between your moves, but it's instant for us because that's just how the game works, right? So like I would say days. Yeah, okay, but like however long it needs to be, but it doesn't matter. Time just passes. It's just cut. It's just a cut or whatever. And so you move your units, and then the your general, your right hand man or whatever, who then has just immediately received the information back through whatever, through bird, through post or through magic portal or whatever, then yeah. Then takes that information and then is like, okay, so I've just heard your cavalry has been flanked.
But that's you're describing that as a human being telling you. How do you present that to a player?
No, he's not telling you. He's literally just moving the unit.
Okay, so the units move. Right.
I think everything can be compressed down to easy and quick understand icons and keywords. So like rattled or fleeing or all of these different things. Like as you watch Troop A of Troop 1 to 16, right, you're watching Troop 1 do his movement. The moment you press end turn, he literally moves up to the side and then it pauses for a second because he can then see something come up from the side. And when he pauses, it then goes back to him. Sound effect, fucking weird vibration in the controller. It's like, oh, is he going to do it? Is he going to keep moving? Yeah, he does keep moving. Awesome. If he doesn't, then the command line that you've given them just shatters. And it's like, well, shit, okay, he's now not following that order. What's he going to do now? And that's when he then does his own thing. And you're like, oh, fuck, what's he doing? I think
that works really
well. If it compresses down into just icons that show up on the screen and just, you know, if they're hunkering down and a group of units come down from the side, the hunkering down icon breaks away and it turns into a targeting icon. And you're like, oh shit, they've gotten up to start shooting at them. They shouldn't have done that. Like you can see everything just happen in that way. And as you watch it unit by unit by unit by unit, you then have an idea of exactly how everyone acted by the start of the next turn. And that's how you then use that to gauge, you know, what the next map will look like when you start to give new orders.
Yeah.
I like the prospect that you can actually make those little, you know, wooden figurines on a map in a war room look really kind of engaging because you might have the zoom in, you might have a cinematic that explains some stuff, but just seeing someone pushing those counters along and then suddenly going, nope, knocks a bunch off the table. You're like, shit. I think that's the emotive prospect
I've put my cavalry here. What's going to happen? Oh, fuck. They've just been removed. They've just fallen over. They're dead. Now what am I going to do? How am I going to respond to that? And Tom, what you were saying about like having the arrows shatter, like the command line being broken, like the feedback on the controller or whatever, for example, while you're trying to figure out like, oh, fuck, what's going to happen? Are they actually going to do it? Another thing I was thinking is like, we've been talking about having the individual units, like again, like cavalry or footmen or pikemen or whatever, or you know, whatever era they would be, wizards, I don't know. And but what if could there be, if you were playing like a larger campaign, what if there were essentially two different kind of levels of the map where you have a commander? Say if you have a campaign and you're attacking like multiple areas, multiple cities, and you are the person who's overseeing all of it. So you have the basic, a very basic world map overview where you have five commanders and you're like, okay, I'm sending this commander here, blah, blah, blah. And then when you click on the commander and then that takes you into the deeper level of this is what this area looks like. This is where the fight, this particular fight in the campaign is going to happen. And then that's when you get a bit more detail on the free movement. Could that work, or does that make it too much, too complicated?
In a campaign, you command a series of battles in a larger war campaign, either to lead your kingdom to glory or victory, or fail them and bring them to ruin. Campaigns can be run in a variety of styles, which will result in mostly aesthetic, but sometimes mechanical changes. You decide where your forces move on the world map, and you decide whether you want to take offensive or defensive positions. The game is still turn-based in the world map, and each turn roughly equates to a week. Each time you come in contact with an enemy army, a battle ensues. There you go.
Okay.
So
is this what he's basically imagining this, right? Is it you have the, like, these two, well, maybe not two levels, but like you are essentially like fighting multiple battles at once, right?
Yeah, you've got commanders that are leading troops, but in the world map you're the general commanding the commanders or whatever the hierarchy is. It does also say here, for example, you can choose to run a fantasy campaign instead of a historical one, which introduces new types of units and commanders. I mean, that sounds like a very different game entirely. Like, we'll start with this one first before we introduce Warhammer into it. And then we'll get the, you know, Games Workshop payments and start making games for them.
Sure.
But yeah, he does also talk about there is no particular faction or no particular era right now. It's literally just whatever it is. I think it's just go with the basic cavalry, archers, swordsmen, pikemen, that sort of thing. Always works. And there's also another way to play the game is through scenarios in which you're given very specific commanders, units, and battle situations ranging in difficulty from historic battles like Thermopylae and Shirayama. Remember those ones? Anyone?
My favorites. Yeah.
Love those classics. Ones. So there's scenarios. And then the final way is to play online, which is just standard, you know, online play. You pick a draft of units and then go against each other. Now, before we go forward, intelligence reports and enemy espionage. During a battle, you as the general may receive reports from your spies and scouts indicating possible enemy actions and allowing you to outwit your opponents or giving you information on an enemy commander's strengths and weaknesses, allowing you to tailor your attack to their weakest attributes. However, the enemy knows you're trying to spy on them and may attempt to feed you false information. Each report comes with a chance of accuracy, and it's up to you to decide which risks you're willing to take. I think that's an important one.
Okay.
Is that the information you receive, like, from the enemy side, it's very difficult of saying, I know this goes even deeper into Chris's, how the fuck do you communicate this? But, like, a group of archers or whatever...
Like, I think the idea with, like, you know how you were saying with the, you know, with the command arrows of like, this is where I'm expecting this unit to go now. And you just have the exact same for the enemy side. So you see their intention, an arrow from your information. This is the intention. This is where you think they're intending to go. This is what you think they're intending to do. And maybe that could even be like, maybe it doesn't have to be a percentage. Maybe it could just be like a color between some kind of gradient between green and red, like depending on how trustworthy the information
is. Don't use color. Use numbers. I'm just saying this as a, like an accessibility thing. Color is really bad because if you rely on one type of thing, it's
okay. Like a percentage, maybe then, or basically some way. How would
people
know
what percentages are?
Yeah.
Well, people know what percentages are. You go to XCOM, you 95% chance to hit. You're going to miss because it's 5% to miss. And that's just the way XCOM works. But like you understand that the chances of that happening are fixed.
So say that if you have the arrow and then on the tip of the arrow, whatever, there's a percentage chance. So like if you hover, if you mouse over the arrow, it's like 50% chance. And that's when you, so then as soon as you like finish your move and you end your turn, then you maybe like it can go through each command line on your side of things and the enemy actions just like one by one, and you see the result of what you think is going to happen versus what actually happens.
I think, you see the enemy unit move, and then if it encounters, like, I guess you can see it move, and if no one is able to corroborate that information, like if you then move a unit up to it and it turns to mist and you're like, fuck, he's not there. He's meant to be there. Why is he not there? But I guess you could also say, like, if you aren't able to identify that it's not true or whatever, maybe there's not units in the area, maybe it's not outside of the fog of war or whatever, then it just happens. You're like, okay, archers, they are there now. So I think that's where it's a game of UI. I think it's more UI than it is anything else, because it's just bringing stuff down to very, very quick, easy to understand things that just happen in seconds, but you are able to easily identify exactly what happened, and that's how it's communicated. It's if we can't like go through every single possibility now and come up with an entire list of things, but I don't think it needs a dude like a commander with 4,000 voice lines saying, "Commander, the archers, they're not there. Fuck."
Yeah, it just needs to be as simple as possible. It's literally like the pieces a bit, you're moving the pieces and then you end your turn and then other pieces get moved based on what you've done.
Yeah, or like what you believe to be happening. And more often than not, it doesn't happen that way. But maybe they decide to do their own thing and it's actually better. Like maybe you gave them a dud command and you're like, "Oh, actually, shit, you're right. You should have shot at these guys."
But yeah, like perhaps then that would affect your loyalty even more. Like if they decide to do something that is, if they go against your order, but then they're better for it, then does that mean their loyalty decreases even more? How would that even work?
Or maybe they break their order and it goes really bad for them, and then you can just brand them as cowards and have everyone chase them down.
Can you give them an order to be like, do what you want?
Sure,
do what you want.
Sure, why not?
I feel like you have to as the king or the person giving the order, you have to be like, you have to give them something.
Oh, you are not the king. This is important. Of course, you're not the king. Good point. Because in campaign mode. Requesting troops and resources. While in a campaign setting, there's more to the game than each individual battle. In between battles, at any point in time, you make a request to the Crown for more troops. When making this request, you can ask for any number of any units you see fit from a pool of total kingdom units, so just as much as you want. But ultimately, the Crown decides how many you get. And the same rules apply for resources, which is what you use to feed your units in between battles.
Chris. So it's like Yes, Your Grace meets Civ meets Total War meets Time Commanders.
I like the Yes, Your Grace comparison. That's
because
really, that's,
yeah. I feel like, well, but then you're not the one doing it. It's like automated. But then how does that? Like, I think the king idea should have objectives themselves. They're like, we need to, you know, claim this much land, or, you know, we need to go after these guys specifically. If you run into these guys. Mm. Make sure we fuck them up.
Yeah,
because
I think,
you know,
completing specific requests will increase your loyalty, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe it also says holding defensive positions that are under attack gives you more loyalty. Losing key areas that you're in command of, that loses your loyalty. But I really like the idea of you're in like really rough area, like there's armies to the north or armies to the east. And you're like, fuck, we need the units to come in. He better like say yes to this requisition of units. And then he turns around and says, we can only provide 4 archers. And you're like,
yeah,
what am I meant to do with that?
What if it's like totally, if it totally fucks you over, like if the moment where like his loyalty snaps, his loyalty view breaks, and you think like you're on, I don't know, it's like Helm's Deep and you need the elves to arrive, basically. It's the equivalent of that. And then you get you request a whole army to defend and he just doesn't send anything.
In the middle of a battle, you're like, the cavalry, the 400 cavalry was meant to be here. Where the hell is it?
Yeah.
Mm. And like halfway through the battle,
look to the east. The first light of the fifth day.
Get those moments.
They all coming over the hill, and you're like, they've arrived. They've finally arrived, as promised by the king.
The way, before we get too far off it, the way Yes, Your Grace worked, which I think was a really good comparison, Chris, is that you basically play as a king.
Thank you.
Just sitting on your throne in your throne room. And it's a lot more of a personal story, but essentially, all your job is you hold court and people come up to you and say, "Oh, dear king, like the village we're in, all the chickens died. We can't feed ourselves. We need some grain." And you're like, "Okay, have 20% of my grain." And then someone else comes in and says, "Oh, but like our cows died. We can't feed ourselves. We need some grain. Or no, we need some money to buy grain." And you're like, "Okay, have some money." And
then by the end of the week, single focused game.
But by the end of the week, you have to manage how many like resources you're giving out in terms of like food, gold, but also trying to accrue power, like strength in terms of army number. And you're constantly using that and constantly managing it, but also it's constantly draining. Even at a very base level, even if you do nothing, at the end of every week, you have just used some of that just by all your subjects being alive and draining your resources. And so I feel like that should have an effect. The same should apply to like loyalty in this. Your loyalty should always be constantly draining, because it would be so OP if you could lock in 100 loyalty all the time and then suddenly everyone has like a 10% damage bonus or whatever. Needs to be really hard to get to those. Or maybe there are certain levels of like, you know, if you reach 70% loyalty, you get this effect. And if you reach 80%, you get this effect. Or I don't know, somewhere that you were.
Yeah, I mean, if you stay out of battle after battle, then yeah, your people are going to get restless and miserable because like there's other armies doing their shit and you're just standing in a defensive position like 4 miles in behind the border and you're like, well, we're not doing anything.
Yeah, but also you can't afford to wait because they're draining all your they're eating all the fucking food and you can't get food from anywhere unless you request some more from the king or whatever. So you have to press on, even though there's a good chance you might lose this battle. If you stay where you are, you might starve as well.
I think ultimately what I really like about this is Total War is a very, very good game. Very good game. However, it almost gives you too much power and too much control over your armies, because all you need to recruit 40 archers is 400 gold. And it's just like, yep, they've joined your army and they are loyal to you and they're obedient and they are going to stay with you for the rest of the damn game as long as they can stay alive.
Yeah, that's the point of Total War, though. Total War isn't that game. Total War is a battle sim game, right?
So I know,
that mechanic is just a formality of, sure, the more gold I get, the more troops I can buy, which makes sense. But they don't go into the in-depth, because that's not what that game is.
Yeah, I know. I just mean, like, it's still... Oh, that's what I mean. It's a very good game. However, I would like it if it had that. I know the Skaven faction in Total War Warhammer. They have loyalty, and I think some certain lords have loyalty, but that all that does is lose as a champion or a named unit if their loyalty gets too low. However, it's kind of like, as long as they're not fleeing, they're following your orders. And as long as they're in your army, they're obedient. And it's kind of like, I almost really like the idea that you are a commander serving a general, serving a king, and you're relying on them to give you what you want. Yeah, maybe they don't, and maybe it's frustrating that they don't, and it's annoying. You're annoyed at the game that it hasn't given you these things. But as long as it's open information, it's understandable, it's loyalty, your loyalty is too low. That's why you're not getting these things. You don't have enough resources, or you don't have enough gold or whatever to fund this massive army. We can't give you these things because you can't support it. Yeah. It's things that you can balance by, well, if he won't give me these things because of this, I'll fix that. And then he will give me these things. If he wants me to get into bigger battles, I'll do that. And maybe I'll lose everyone and my loyalty will tank or whatever. And it all makes sense. I think that's what's kind of cool about it is, yeah, your units might disobey you. That's awesome. Yeah, the king might not give you everything you need. That's really fucking cool. I love it.
I think I can imagine it being really, really hard. Frustrating in a kind of, but in a good way. Like I feel like if it's done right, then as long as it, like you say, Tom, as long as it feels like every mistake you're making or every time you're fucking up, it's because you know, okay, I just should have done this. I should have done this and then I would have been fine. Or if I did this, it would have been different. And so as long as you're getting that kind of feedback rather than just arbitrary, not like if the king only sends you 20 units instead of the 500 you're expecting and you don't know why, then that would be frustrating. But if you're like, okay, it's because I've used all my food and I don't have enough food to feed these people, or then like he obviously is doesn't like the fact that I haven't killed enough units, so I haven't pushed further enough into the territory or whatever. As long as you know the reasons behind that.
Then. Yeah, and I think another important note is he has said how you win or lose, and winning comes in three ways. Defeating the enemy. Another one is attrition, and that is just after a year, or he says, let's say 1 year, in which every turn in the open world is a week. Yeah. He also said that every turn in the open world is a week. That means you only got 52 turns, right, before attrition happens, right?
Yeah.
In this case, in his example. So the game isn't massively long in his eyes. So I think it's one of those games that, yeah, you start it, you fail, you know why you failed, you try it again. You start it, you get a little further, you fail again because your loyalty was too low, you try again. It's a roguelike, and also every unit is a card in your deck. Also,
and there's some
project.
Sort of overarching event that will happen. And you have to,
it's from XCOM. I can't remember the name of it.
James, is this like anything that you have or would normally play?
It's not like anything that I would normally play or have played, for that matter, no.
What are your thoughts on it so far?
I don't know, what are the motives? I think the whole you don't know, are they historical battles? I don't think they would be historical battles. I don't think they could be, otherwise as Chris alluded to earlier with the history nerds, it's like, well, I know that the archers all came in from this angle, and then if I put my troops here. So and if it's a replayable, you know, if you only got 52 turns, you keep playing, you're gonna have to have the opponent do different things.
Yeah.
Or you might have to have the topology change, or you might, you know, it really is a roguelike. You've got to have those ever-changing situations
as well, affecting battles. Yeah.
I think the thing that excites me the most is this idea that you're trying to outwit your opponent, or you're trying to guess what they're going to do. It's like, yeah, I think they're going to send in their troops into this clearing because it's a good access point for my troops on this side. So I'm going to respond to that. That in itself is reason enough for me to play that. I think that's a great game.
So every action as well is kind of like, if the information has a percentage chance of being false, every action you make has a percentage chance of them saying no.
Yeah,
I think it could make for a really good multiplayer game. I don't want to make everything multiplayer, but in this sense, it could be a good 1v1 kind of.
There is online play in this game.
Yeah, he's got that. He's got a bullet point for that.
He's reduced online play to a bullet point.
No,
60% of your dev time.
I think it's turn-based, though.
Could make easy online
makes
easier.
It easier. Asynchronous makes it a little bit easier.
But I think, like, I think James, what you just said, then, like, being able to break down the whole game into a series of micro decisions that you're making, like, it's almost like these tiny, like, it's like. Okay, like it's probably not a very good comparison, but I'm thinking of it just in terms of like the feeling of chess when you make a move and then you're just sitting there thinking, okay, what's going to happen now? Because you've imagined like what your move is based on what you think the opponent is going to do, or what you think they might do like further on down the line, or what you think you're going to do, and then it's just a constant series of these little like, okay, I'm putting this here, your move, let's see what happens. And that just like with over a, like, you know, 100 different decisions.
But with the random element of things like weather, or, you know, your troops deciding to do something different, you know, the idea that you could move a bishop diagonally and it goes, nah, I'm going to move this way. And you're like, what the fuck? No, what are you doing?
Who
do you think you are? The queen?
Rogue chess. That's what we should make.
I do like the idea. It's always difficult to try and outfox an AI because everyone will just assume, well, the AI knows I'm lying. But if they can give you false information, you can give them false information.
Got to remember, it's harder to make stupid AI.
Yeah. Because in the online play, I think that's a really fun thing to do, where you're like, I've got, hey, your spies are reporting that you've got some archers coming over the hill. I'm going to defend against those. And you're like, oh, yeah, those archers, huh?
Yeah.
But, okay. I think actually, like, yeah, also that does make multiplayer, like, one-on-one, super exciting as well. That would be so much fun to just play against one person, like on voice comms or whatever. Like if you're just chatting on Discord while you're playing, just the idea of just trying to fuck the other person over, or trying to make them just like trying to troll them, or trying to make them think that you're about to do something when you're not. Just like those constant games you can play. I almost feel like it would be more fun like multiplayer than it was against the AI.
Yeah. And the idea, maybe you can send them a raven as well. So you're having a voice chat and then you go, oh, I've just sent you a raven. And you're like, all right, I'll check
fuck
it out.
You.
And
it's just a dick.
Direct.
You like flood their communications with just insults. And they're like, I can't tell what my units have done because I'm just being harassed.
Oh my God. It's like an old school DOS attack. Just a fucking million ravens. Chris, like, how are you feeling about this now? Because I know you've had like some issues with the feedback loop, and in terms of like how the gameplay would work. Like, what are you feeling? The kind of the biggest weaknesses, and how would you go about solving them?
I think the icons are, rather than like a flood of text. I hate reading floods of text, which is why I can't get on with Civ. Civ does this really bad. Do you know when you get like your turn starts and it's just dung, 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 dung. I'm like, what the, why are you, I don't need to yes, I need to know all this information probably, but it's just overwhelming and it's just like, what? Yeah. I don't, great, thanks. That's half my turn just clicking these fucking icons. I think, making a way of presenting that in a easy to read format. And yeah, icons are normally the best because, you know, they stand out, they're different from each other. Obviously, colors don't always work. So yeah, icons and shapes are always the best way to go when you're trying to represent stuff, if you can. Mm. That's just from an accessibility point of view in general.
Good point.
So that cleared a lot up. I say this all the bloody time, is I'm not being negative about the idea. It's just that if you're going to come up with an idea, you need to think of it not as of what would be cool and how it would do, is how are you presenting it to a player who, let's assume they didn't do the tutorial. Let's assume they don't, like, you know, you have to just assume that the person playing has the attention span of a spoon, right?
Yeah.
You just need to make everything incredibly obvious. And once you've got that, you can expand on it. You need to just come refine that one thing. So I'm not trying to shit on any ideas or anything like that. I'm trying to just be a voice of reason, because with a game design document, it's like 4 pages. That's great. Like, you've got some great ideas written down there, but you're gonna realize that you'll probably end up chucking half of that. Like if you made it in a studio, you would chuck half of it. Because one, you need to stay in scope. And two, it's just that just because it's an idea doesn't mean it's good. Half the stuff I make, I show someone else that, what the fuck is that? I'm like, like, it would seem like a good idea at the time. It seemed like a good idea at 3 a.m.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Then you realize, like, what...
that's what this whole podcast someone is about, asks, Tom's list.
Tom's list of ideas at 3 a.m. But that's the thing. You need someone to question it. So sharing ideas is always good, and which is why obviously him sharing to us is good as well, because you need other people's points of view, because you'll always think that your idea is good.
Shane, you've done a kick-ass job of predicting. You've done a kick-ass job of predicting all the questions and issues we might have and answering all of those, which is impressive, actually. Like, I have an answer for almost everything. However, there are a few that was missed, and it's a few that I think we've solved. I did agree with you. The open information is very important. If you just literally finish a turn and then some dude spends 45 minutes telling you, yeah, this dude, he didn't do this thing, this dude didn't do this thing, that sucks. I'm not going to listen to that. Like, I'm not going to read it for sure. It's just finding a way to solve it.
But then the war map has the perfect environment for displaying those icons in a way that it doesn't feel totally just alien and just, why have I got all this UI flashing in my face? It's actually you could arrange it in a way that makes sense as if the general is explaining all that information back to you, and you can have the little
as well.
Things be pushed across the table, and, you know, you can have all that being drawn on the map, or, you know, the way that you can display that information can be succinct and easily communicated, but you're getting across a lot of information.
Okay, look, we've run out of time, but I think this guy, I'm guessing, is going to go and make the game. So really the question is...
No, he's the ideas guy. He said that.
But I feel like this is his big one. Look at it. He's done 4 pages.
This is the one where he learns Unity or whatever.
I've written 4 pages loads of times.
I've written 4 pages in my life, I must say.
Shane, aka King of Mushan, thank you very, very much for this.
I think it's really, really cool.
It's fantastic.
Definitely not fraught with issues. It definitely has some issues. War Room is the original name. Chris, I think this is your job.
We should just, I don't know. Totally accurate war commanders. There you go.
Yeah.
It needs to have some time commanders in
talks.
There. Commanders.
Tom, do you want to go and make this game with me?
I don't even think I'd be able to make John Quick, let alone this. I don't think I'd be able to make hashtag blessed. And that's the easiest one by far.
I can't remember the name of the guy who made John Quick. And the Pyrian prototype for us.
I can't remember. Is it Nicholas something?
Nicholas, yeah. Nicholas, maybe. Nicholas, if you're listening, yeah. please, can you make a prototype of this as well?
That's a bit of a step up. That's a bit of a step up. Oh, just make this short cargo. Can you just make a fully fledged tabletop RPG style?
If CD Projekt Red, if you're listening, can you just put this together for us?
I think that sounds like a good way.
They're not busy.
Creative, you're listening.
Josh and I have got a list of stupid, dumb game ideas as well. Much like Tom's list.
What the hell? They're not stupid or dumb.
Not all of them, but we have a war room type game on there. So this is like bringing an idea that we thought about to life, which is amazing.
I see. You have a war room idea on there now.
Don't
even go there. I think we said, nah, we probably can't make it.
All right, well, so look out for Catastrophic Overload's next game coming 2022.
Totally accurate war commanders or whatever it was.
Shane, thank you very much, aka King of Mushan. Anyone else who's listening, if you have any more ideas that you want to send in, please send them in. We'd love to read them because I think they provide us an opportunity to not have a game that is just going to be a roguelike or a deck slinger. maybe we'll go back to one of those next time.
Yeah, we got a prerequisite if you do submit a pitch. 4 pages or less.
Yes, please. Yeah, please. 4 pages was really pushing it. But this happened to be exceptional. So yeah, one sheet would be amazing. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time. Oh my God, the bell's just gone. I've got a parcel.
Perfect timing.
That's see you guys later. Bell that ends the podcast.
Bye.
Podcast alarm. Goodbye.
It's Alex's delivery of sex toys.
Finally.